Happy to have you, and we'd like to welcome anybody new. I guarantee you, you're going to have a great time. It's a great night out, great date night, I'm telling you. And the show is all ages, so we recommend maybe 10 years old and above, but it's not.
They have enough of an attention span, so
right,
to listen.
It is, but we get consistently great feedback, and one of the best parts of the show is this happens almost every show where someone. It reminds them of something from their past or their childhood. Oh. I do a segment called This Day in 1944 where I talk about what things were like, you know, on this particular day, 1944. And I've had people who are in the service and who really appreciated being reminded of how important radio was to their family or to them. I know my uncle was, radio is what kept him sane when he was in the Pacific in the 40s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was the primary medium at the time. It's hard to believe that now.
It was. Television existed, but it hadn't come on yet.
Right. Jerry, again, thanks. So we've been talking with Jerry Chrisman, co-founder and producer of Tesla City Stories, and we really appreciate you coming in.
Oh, thank you,
on Columbus Day, Indigenous Peoples Day.
Thank you so much.
And again, they have a special Halloween performance planned for this Saturday, October 14th. At Portland's Fremont Theater, and it might be one of your last chances to see this wonderful theater. But I hope by some means they're saved, but I don't know what the odds are of that. Anyway, they're located at 2393 Northeast Fremont. The show starts at 8 p.m. I'm Ken Jones with KBOO's News in Depth, wishing you all a happy Indigenous Peoples Day.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Radiance of Resistance, Thursday, October 12th at 6 p.m. at McMiniman's Mission Theater in Portland. Radiance of Resistance is an award-winning documentary that tells the story of two youths who have become global ambassadors for Palestinian human rights. The film is an intimate look at their everyday lives and roles as part of a new generation of Palestinian civil rights leaders. Again, that's Radiance of Resistance, Thursday, October 12th at 6 p.m. at McMiniman's Mission Theater, 1624 Northwest Gleason Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. The only program of its type in Oregon or Southwest Washington. I'm Stephen Siegel, your host. And our co-host, Chris Reiser, will not be joining us tonight. We hope to have him back soon. Also sitting in, or I should say on the phone with us, is Elizabeth Dominguez from Santa Maria, California. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Well, I just want to finish by saying Labor Radio comes on every Monday at 6. Chris and I are public school teachers and host every second Monday of the month. So, Elizabeth, you and I get to hang out for the next 30 minutes.
Sounds great.
It is great. And I also want to honor and respect that I'm going to be asking you about some stuff that, you know, there were some difficult times that you went through. I'm sure there were some emotionally challenging moments, and even though I get the sense that you're a very strong woman, I know that this was tough for you. I know that for me, having gone through some similar experiences was, I would describe even as traumatic. So I just want to put that out there that I want to do the best that I can to respect that.
Thank you.
So why don't you start by just telling us a little bit about the beginning of your teaching career, when and why you got into teaching?
Well, I started teaching about 25 years ago. I went to Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo and just always felt that was my calling. And I'm a bilingual teacher and began in Long Beach and then continued in Guadalupe, California for the remainder. And then the past 3 years was in the Santa Maria district. So,
got it. And
in
so,
a nutshell.
would you say that, I mean, is bilingual education really something that is near and dear to you? Is that something that you feel passionate about, or is that more something that you just kind of fell into?
No, I feel very passionate about it. When I first began teaching, that was the era when we taught the students in their native language how to read and write in Spanish, and then transition them over when they got to the third grade level. And then in California, there was a proposition, I forget the number, was passed for English only, and bilingual education ended as I had known it when I had begun my career. And so then it was just immersion in English for the students, but bilingual education is very necessary, in my opinion, especially in California with our high immigrant population from Mexico. And I feel blessed to be able to communicate with both the students and the parents, you know, from the point of view of being able to create those relationships and bonds with the family and the community and the students on a personal level.
Yes, but isn't that un-American to be speaking something other than English? No, I'm kidding, of course.
Indeed, especially with our new president. No, I actually think the opposite. I think the more languages that we can promote and support, the better. What I've actually found is my bilingual students are usually the most successful. Even those who come speaking no English have the advantage of being bilingual, which is a huge asset, not only in their future, but just in their quality of life, in being able to just enjoy and be able to reap the benefits of being able to communicate in two languages and understand two languages. It really creates a whole nother brain, so to speak, and it opens up a whole new world. So it's
actually an advantage to be bilingual. Who would have thought that?
Absolutely.
I tell my students that I'm jealous when I find out that they're bilingual. I wish that I was. So you were working in elementary schools?
Yes.
Okay, so with the little ones. And you tell us a little bit more. So I know that you spent time in the classroom, but then you went and were working with migrant education. So just tell us a little bit more.
Yes. So after Guadalupe, I was offered a position as a TOSA, a teacher on special assignment with the Santa Maria district and the elementary district. And I was, the job that I was hired to do was half a day teaching in an after school intervention program for first through sixth graders. And then the other half of the day was working in the migrant office.
See, now that's a problem already. I can see a problem already. And you and I got to speak some on Saturday, so I'm a little bit familiar with your story, but anytime, my understanding is anytime you're told this is a half-time job, it's not really a half-time job. So if you have two half-time jobs, my guess would be it's more like a job and a half.
Right, or more like two jobs, because
Yes, exactly.
And indeed it was. So the office part entailed testing preschoolers one-on-one, which was solely my job in a district that has thousands of students, and assessing them, scoring those tests, and entering the data, and reporting on the data to the state and my superiors, and then the other half teaching, but you know, traveling from the office to teach. And so the time to prep to be able to teach those students was not there. And then also the other part of that job too, is in addition to those two parts, was teacher training. So I was responsible to plan in services for teachers who would teach in these migrant programs, and they had various programs that service students, to plan the training, organize the training, deliver the training, and then support those teachers who I had trained at the various sites with the curriculum or with the program itself.
Talk a little bit about the demands that your supervisor had. You were telling me about these impromptu meetings that were constantly being called.
Right. Well, the demands, it was a very demanding job just by virtue of the fact of all the different hats I would have to wear, which I enjoyed the job itself, but it was unsustainable because it couldn't be done by one person. It really was a job that needed to have two full-time certificated people doing. And then on top of that, you know, not having, you know, prep time to allow to plan lessons for the students I would teach in the afternoon, they would have the supervisors would call meetings, and they began later to be regularly scheduled meetings for at least 2 hours, maybe three every week. But normally during the course of a day in the office, there would be almost constant meetings, like on the spot, like, oh, we need to meet for this, or oh, we need to meet for that. And so as I and there were a couple of other TOSAs in the office were doing our work, we would get pulled away from that work to go to a meeting. And so the work continued to build up because of those impromptu meetings that occurred virtually daily. And so that would pile up, and then I would start taking it home because, you know, you'd fall behind because then you had to go teach in the afternoon, and then you had to correct those papers and then come back mm-hmm. the next day and do it all over again. But the new day with its new tasks also had yesterday and the day before's tasks, because you couldn't get to them. None of the TOSAs could because of those meetings. So all of that work just kept compounding on itself. So that's when the workload became an issue, and I was worried about the services provided to the students that I was providing and being able to ensure that they were receiving the services that they were entitled to and the quality, given that there were so many distractions and interruptions and meetings.
And I think that that's important to point out, that sometimes that when teachers talk about workload issues, it can be painted in the media as if, well, that teacher just doesn't want to work hard. Teaching's a hard job and they just need to work harder. You run marathons, I know that. So you're not afraid of hard work.
No, exactly. And again, I enjoyed the job itself and what I was hired to do, but it quickly turned to another animal very, very quickly. The job description, it exponentially, the workload changed. And so, right, and a teacher workday, as you mentioned, a lot of people think, you know, you work 6.5 hours a day and you have summers off, but that's with the understanding that, of course, you're going to go home and grade papers. Of course, you're going to, on the weekends, write lesson plans. Of course, you're going to call parents at night to report or, you know, compliment their children. And there's all sorts of after-hours activities that teachers do on their own time that are just part of being a professional.
Yeah, most of the teachers go into teaching because they actually want to make a difference with our students, right? With their kids. They actually do care about their kids. And so when they have workload issues, it's because they're concerned that they can't do everything that kids really need.
Exactly. It's not that we don't want to work hard or that we don't want to do the work. It's that we do want a good job. And in order to do a good job and in order to provide the best for those students, because my big thing is you only get one chance. I mean, you're only a fifth grader once. And so mm-hmm. you have to make it their best fifth grade year, and you have to provide the most excellent education you can. They don't get a second chance. And so when you are pulled away from that, it directly affects students. And that's, you know, when I became very concerned, because it was going to affect the education of the students. It wasn't because I didn't want to work hard.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. Elizabeth, tell us about what you decided to do with your concerns about the workload.
Well, I mentioned it to my direct supervisor, and they would, or he would, I don't know how to say it. I would mention it, but it would get lost in the shuffle. Mm-hmm. It never would really be addressed. There was no concrete plan of attacking, you know, how do we, you know, maybe give some of the tasks that could be done by classified personnel, you know, for example, data input or something that didn't require a teaching credential or a bilingual credential or a master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
Could we use some of the resources we already had? Do we have budget to potentially, you know, hire somebody to do some of those tasks?
Mm-hmm.
And it never really happened. Well, not never really, it didn't happen. And so I then brought the concern to the human resources superintendent, who seemed to be supportive and seemed to be open to hearing concerns about how this particular department in the school district seemed to kind of not be a part, but it was kind of an island in the sense that it was run in a different way.
Doesn't sound like they were very accountable to anybody.
Exactly. They ran their own show, and the common understanding was, oh, migrant brings in so much money to the district, you know, we don't want to rock the boat. They, you know, we can't, you know, do anything that's going to upset the migrant administration because, you know, they bring in so much money to the district. I never really understood exactly what that meant, but
yeah.
When I voiced my concerns to the superintendent, she seemed to be open and even encouraged me to press on and, you know, to the point of filing a complaint. I mean, this came after many informal meetings in an attempt to, you know, resolve it at the lowest possible level. So, you know, I didn't go to her directly immediately, but, you know, after not getting relief, and again, the relief for the students, really, not for myself, the relief to have the students receive the curriculum they were entitled to by a professional prepared to deliver the curriculum, it fell on deaf ears.
Yeah. And you said that the superintendent actually encouraged you to file a formal complaint at one point after speaking with her a number of times.
Right. And so this is my first year with this district. So I was a temporary employee and new to this district. And, you know, I wanted to do a good job and serve the students properly and do everything by the book and, you know, assimilate into their culture of work. And I didn't want to upset my supervisors. I really thought that I was going to be there, you know, till the end of my career. I thought I would retire there, that mm-hmm. I live in Santa Maria. I wanted to work for that district. I have roots in this community, and that was my plan. And I fully intended to, you know, do whatever it took, you know, late nights, weekends, holidays, in order to satisfy my employer and, you know, first my supervisors and, you know, the district, so that I could maintain that job and continue to do that job. So I was really walking a tightrope because I didn't have tenure. I didn't want to rock the boat. I didn't want to be thought of as complaining, or, you know, I really wanted to problem solve.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, and I guess I was naive thinking that, you know, we all wanted the best for the students, because mm-hmm. she encouraged me to file a complaint that really was not an appropriate complaint. It was a complaint that didn't fit with the workload. I wasn't complaining. I just had concerns about the workload, and she encouraged me to file a complaint that
Yeah, like from what you told me earlier, was that this was a complaint process that was really set up for if some sort of sexual harassment had occurred, or something more of that nature.
Exactly. What you typically think of as, you know, race, creed, color, gender, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that really had nothing. I mean, maybe it did.
Yeah, maybe it did.
Subconsciously, but that wasn't the gist of it. And mm-hmm. so I kind of got led down the wrong road, and I knew it because I had been in leadership in the union in my prior district. I had been the negotiations chair, the president. You know, I had been involved in CTA, the California Teachers Association. So I knew what, you know, the informal process and maybe the grievance process. And so I knew that wasn't the proper complaint, but when you're the one in it, when it's you and you're not the president, or it's you, you're not serving as the grievance chair, mm-hmm. it's different. It's like you're the patient.
Absolutely.
In the hospital and not the, yeah. So
tell us, I'm looking at my time here, and we don't have a lot more time. So tell us what happened. You filed this formal complaint, and then I know you ended up back in the classroom full time. And then what were their specific accusations once you were back in the classroom full time?
Well, right. So I finished my stint in the migrant program, and they, you know, just something to be said was that the complaint process was, you know, in the district, reviewed by the district, decided by the district. So it was kind of a done deal. There was no real, if you want to call it, due process, or no third mm-hmm. party. It was all in-house. And so, of course, they're going to find I had no reason for a complaint because...
Well, I'm shocked.
It's like, yeah, no, I know. So then the next year, I had an opportunity to go to a classroom position, a regular classroom position, as a temporary employee again. So I had been temporary for 2 years in migrant. So then my third year employed with this district, I went to a regular classroom. And in my opinion, they did that because if they had let me go after I had filed a complaint, that clearly would have been a complaint then, because they would have been letting me go because I complained about the workload. So in order to stave that off, they let me go to a regular classroom, and then again put, you know, pressure and unrealistic expectations. And I think that was just a holding pattern until I was still temporary, and so they didn't really have to give me any reason. But I believe that's why they did that, so that then they could let me go. I think that the district attorney advised, and again, this is all just my opinion, but I believe that the district attorney advised the HR superintendent that, you know, you don't want somebody like that in your district, you know, just when the time's right. I think they had a plan, and, you know.
You're a troublemaker, Elizabeth.
I know. I just want to get the kids the education they deserve. And I know they talk a good talk, but when it gets down to it, they just don't want, they don't want the same thing. So then they let me go at the end of that year, even though it wasn't going to cost them any more because I mean, salary wise, I'm low man on the totem pole, so to speak. And so, and there were other new teachers at the school with my same status. So we had, I want to say three other, when I was a classroom teacher, three other teachers temporary, but I was the one that let go. Yeah. And,
how helpful was your union during this time?
The union, unfortunately, was not helpful at all because at the get-go, they really should have advised me that that wasn't the proper complaint to file. And in hindsight, I wish they would have said, you know, Elizabeth, I know you're upset that the kids aren't getting what they need, but this isn't the right channel, and you shouldn't do this. This isn't going to get the kids what they need. This is the way to do it. Or, you know what, you're not going to win this. Just do the best you can at anything other than file the complaint, because the complaint really was, like you said, traumatic. It was, I had to seek counseling during that time because it was so oppressive.
Wow. And so this year you are not teaching, correct?
Right. So my contract ended in June, and Santa Maria is a small town, and that is the biggest district. So I couldn't teach there, and this year wasn't a big hiring year. And there's only one other district where we live, and so they weren't hiring. And so, yeah, I'm not teaching, and I feel like a duck out of water because that's my passion, that's what I do, that's what I've always done. And
what are you doing for employment? Are you working someplace?
I'm unemployed. Okay. So I was able to file for unemployment. Do you want me to tell you how much that is?
If you want to share.
Yeah, well, I just think it's interesting. So I'm a professional, and I have a bachelor's and a master's and a BCLAT, and I was, you know, on the salary schedule. Unemployment is $450 a week, and that's the max you can get. And in California,
in California, that's not going to get you too far.
Well, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't pay your rent.
Yeah.
So I've actively been looking for work. I'm also a paralegal, so I can pursue a job in that area. But yeah, unemployment, and I like to work. I don't want to be on unemployment. It doesn't pay the bills, and B, I feel like I have too many skills and too much to offer to be on unemployment. I know there's people who, I need it right now because I don't have a job. I'm just like the next person, but I don't want to be on it. I want to be working, and I want to be teaching.
Yes,
but I've been blackballed essentially because I can't work in that district, and it's essentially the only district in town. So if I may have to move, I know I interviewed in Oakland this summer for a job,
Elizabeth,
and I may have to move to.
We're gonna have to wrap it up there.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much for joining us and telling us a little bit about your story. I wish you well, and I hope to hear good things. I want to also thank our engineer, Danielle, and you've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next week and every Monday at 6 o'clock to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is